Welcome to the Warmaster Podcast, episode 9. Last night we recorded a Skype conversation between Paul, myself and Alex Janaway. And we thought we were being clever because we used, we were doing video podcasting. So everybody was on a webcam and we were having fun, kind of being able to look at each other and stuff. But on the flip side, it caused horrific issues with Skype. And I'm glad I don't have to deal with Skype every week because we just do it face to face. So there's a ton of echo, and it sounds like Janice and Paul are actually underwater, and my voice is way too loud, which makes a change from Paul's voice being way too loud. So I had to make a decision as to whether or not to publish it. We have published a ropey episode before. I think it was episode 3 or 4 where we were in a car journey and it was raining. But there was some good stuff in here, and we thought about re-recording it, but I'm probably just going to release it. So if you don't want to fight your way through it, then I understand why. But if you do manage to fight your way through it, you'll hear a song at the end, which is one of my favourite songs of the moment. So episode 9 will be following. As I say, apologies about the Skype. We're new to this. It will get better. I'll make sure everybody uses headsets going forward if we do a Skype episode. And enjoy the episode. Welcome to Warmaster Podcast episode 9 with Paul Barry and our special guest Alex Janaway.
Hello everybody, yeah, I hope you're listening.
Say hello Alex.
Hello, good evening everyone.
Good evening Alex. So Alex, you're going to have to tell us who you are, because I know who you are, but people out there might not know who you are.
Tonight's episode is called The Past, the Future and the Mailbag. And this is obviously our first guest, so it's a new first for Warmaster Podcast. We have a guest. And a new first for Warmaster Podcast, we're recording on Skype. So let's see how this pans out. So first of all, welcome. Yeah, we'd like to say thank you very much for coming on, Alex. And if you want to give us a rundown of your Warmaster history, that would be good.
Okay, well, thank you, Paul. And thank you for having me. I'm privileged to be your first guest. And obviously, I'm setting the bar so low that, you know, your next guest will, well, be better. Now, So what's my Warmaster history? So I kind of fell into Warmaster when I was serving in the military as a regular back in, good Lord, 2000 and, yeah, about the year 2000, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. That's just when the game came out.
Yeah, it was literally just when the game came out. And, you know, back in the day, I'd been a young teenage Warhammer player. But never really, I was never able to make it work, you know, these epic battles I wanted to fight, which we could never get done in a day. Anyway, so, you know, like many folk do, I discovered beer and girls and moved away from the game for a while. Then I got some disposable income and I found Warmaster. And, you know, I can't even remember how I found it, but I was based in Cambridge and suddenly there's this game that came on my radar and I thought, oh, wow, it's Mini Warhammer and it's by Rick Priestley. This can't be bad, and I think I started on the second War Mag when that came out. If that kind of gives you a sort of time context as to when I got involved. Yeah. And I started going down to the Cambridge Games Workshop and playing games down there.
Was that allowed back then? They didn't run you out of town for playing War Master.
As a War Master player, you were welcome back then.
Welcomed.
Wow, that's a switch.
And I remember the store manager had actually scratch built a Warmaster scale Warhammer fortress. So he'd taken the fortress and he's turned it and then built a city behind it, 10 mil scale, and a keep at the back, all out like chipboard and stuff. And I actually bought it off of him and used it about once because it was so big. And anyway, yeah, I got... I kind of dragged in some other mates from the mess and we just started playing it, you know, and I'd be out on exercise in Oman and I'd be taking these little figures with me and I was getting all the regimental headquarters signals tent to paint them for me. So I had a real production line going. And then it really, and that was it. And it just, it got me hooked.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And you've been hooked ever since?
Sorry, carry on.
You've been playing ever since?
Yeah, playing ever since.
15 years.
And, you know, so playing in all the tournaments that were out at the, right at the start.
Yeah.
And you had Games Workshop Nottingham hosting tournaments, you know, official Warmaster tournaments. And you had the Warhammer Player Society also hosting the tournaments as part of their larger weekends. So I'd go along to all of those. So, you know, I guess I kind of got known on the circuit and I knew the players, all the players that were playing them. And there's also something called the Euro GT. Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
So I used to go to that as well, and that was quite mad. You know, so we'd travel over to Belgium and so on, a bunch of us, and it'd be like a truly international affair. And the last one, which was Bognor Regis. And this was God going back to early 2000s. And a guy called Wayne Rosier, hi Wayne, if you're listening, he kind of organised it. He was very much the sort of the British end of the Euro playing community. But the bizarre thing about this Bognor event was, everyone did turn up there, was there happened to be a clown convention going on at the same time. And it was just the weirdest thing. And actually, we felt entirely normal and in no way strange playing our games, walking out, and just to be confronted by these just hordes of clowns. It was weird. So I was always around on the tournament circuit. And then things just died off, you know. And obviously, as I'm sure you waxed lyrical about, is the game kind of entered its sort of dark period where there was just a few guerrilla players left. Hiding in the trees and you know, bursting out in the middle of the night and occupying a table somewhere. And I guess from like 2006, me and a few friends, Jim Beach, a colleague of mine, we basically set up a tournament. We thought, well, there's nothing happening in the UK now other than some very small, you know, basically almost one or two people playing. So we set up the Saffron Walden Tri-Wizard Tournament.
So who are the Tri-Wizards? Why are the three?
Because it was a blatant rip-off from Harry Potter.
Oh, I see.
It just stuck. And we kept this thing going ever since. And, you know, it was like one weekend a year. And it was very much just like a one-day thing. But it just meant that there was, for a lot of guys that did like Warmaster but weren't part of the gaming clubs or anything like that, it just meant there was a weekend in the year where they could come together just to play Warmaster.
Yeah.
And in Saffron Walden, I kind of created a bit of a hub of players anyway. Again, ex-Warhammer players and so on. So there was a small group of us that Nucleus just kept it going. And then literally over the last year or two, something's happened. And we now have tournaments.
Shall I jump in there and explain like how we like got this relationship, etc.? Like,
yeah,
how's going forward? Okay, so if you don't mind me saying that is Janice. It's like basically, me and Janice are in the same regiment, and I was away on an exercise in Holland, and I got the guy I was sharing a room with instantly saw I was a geek, because I didn't even try to hide the fact that I was reading Warhammer the End Times.
I'm not sure you could hide it. I'm not sure you could hide it, Paul.
I was just like, I'm here reading my book about Nagash. You know, like, what are you doing? and the guy I was sharing a room with was some ex SAS guy. And I was like, he's going to bully me. Anyway, but instead, he actually said, oh, you should meet Captain Janeway, Alex Janeway. You would get on well with him. You're that type of person.
You're one of those.
And didn't think much of it, you know. So when we come back from this trip in Holland back to Cambridge, I get said, by the same guy, it was like, go upstairs, his office is upstairs, and go in and see him. And I was like, okay. And you're like sent to like the headmaster's office or something. And I was like, I knock on the door, and instantly I can see, like, I walk into this officer's office, and it's like, yeah, he's got like, you know, like board games up on the desk and everything. And I was like, I recognize Star Wars Armada and stuff. And I was like, okay, this guy, I know, this is my kind of guy.
Yeah.
And we got chatting, and I sat down, and I was like, hi, I'm Paul. And I said, and he asked, and we got chatting about instantly clicked. And you asked me, Janice, he said, oh, so like, what games do you play? I said, I'm mostly War Machine, but I've started playing War Master again. And you said, oh, are you playing in the Triwizard tournament? And I was like, how does he know about this? You know, like, I was like, yeah, I am. Like, are you? And he said, yeah, I'm running it. And, like, and it's like, ah, I sent you money on PayPal then.
You did. You know,
like, and yeah, that's how this has all come about, really, is that. So I was like, well, I'm going to have to then set up my own event, aren't I, if this works? And it has, and et cetera, et cetera. And so that's really how this four tournament a year scene that we've created in here in Colchester and Chelmsford, you know, like in the future probably, and yours in Saffron Walden. That's how that's come about, by this mutual coincidence connection.
Happy coincidence.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for explaining that. So let's talk about what you've been doing this week, Alex. Have you been doing anything this week in wargaming?
Yes.
You can pass if you want to think about it.
No, I have been doing stuff. So, as I mentioned, a good friend of mine, Jim Beach, who, again, I'm a military man who I introduced to the game. We were working together in the army, and I turned him into a fanatic convert, and I know he's listening. And he contacts me every other day with a new interesting variation on an army list. And he is an incredible painter.
Yeah, I second that. His stuff's fantastic.
And what he loves doing, he'll take the army lists and he'll proxy. So he'll go, right, well, what else can I use to create this army list? So I know at the moment he's creating like an undead army, but using these snake men from Eureka.
Yeah,
I've seen
some of them.
Excellent.
So we've been discussing that. I'm actually discussing the fact that he's been playing a game with another colleague, so we were discussing undead army lists and what we would run with. Yes, and funny enough, I sent him my list and he had virtually the same list. So that's pretty much been my wargaming. I mean, I've been playing a lot of Destiny the last 2 days online with friends. So, you know, not quite wargaming.
Okay. Fair enough. Paul, what have you been up to?
What have I been up to? So, okay, you last heard from us last Wednesday. And that evening, at the moment, the club is playing quite a lot of NetEpic. So I taught a game of NetEpic down at the club. And then the 7th was this War Machine event that I've been practicing for at Harlow, where I took second place, you know, like a four game event. So that was that was pretty good.
Did you get best merc then?
I did. And in fact, because I was the only merc player, sadly, because Kevin Bryan didn't turn up. But that was good. You know, like I won 3 games out of 4, and you know, I found a bit of a power caster in Magnus 2, apparently. So, would you believe it? Anyway, so I've been playing some War Machine, and then on Tuesday, I played a game of War Master with Nav, the guy that actually got me to play War Master again, which was quite fun. I used Empire, he used Orcs, and it was quite an interesting game until it was all looked like it would go my way until the Orc magic like had a perfect. You know, we often say magic doesn't do a lot, but in this game, it just it ruined my artillery in one round. It was like, oh, he cast like 3-4 spells on the bounce, and I was like, that wasn't good. And then again at the club on Wednesday, I played a much bigger game of NetEpic. So I've had quite a good week for wargaming, really.
You have. Good for you.
I've got another game of War Master lined up tomorrow against Rodders, Barry.
Oh, was he playing? He said Dark Elves, proxy Dark Elves.
Dark Elves, I can see he's put the order, he wants to get them, and he's using the tokens at the moment to decide what he wants. So, I'm playing in tomorrow.
Okay, excellent. So I'll just talk about what I've been doing. I played... a Tomb Kings game. The day we played our game, Paul, I played a game in the evening against Dave, and he used the High Elf tournament list.
Yeah.
Ah.
Which is basically rubbish, the High Elf tournament list. I don't know why, unless you were forced to use it, I don't know why you'd use it.
It's interesting because those tournament list is the one that you would think is worse, actually, isn't it? Well, compare it to the Bretonnian one, you would definitely use the tournament list.
Yes, for sure. But they take away, I mean, the High Elves without the stuff in the tournament list, the tournament list turns them into kind of a version of Empire, really, without cannons.
Yeah.
But they have got flyers, I guess. But basically, they don't work. They don't work. And my undead just ate them alive because it was the same list. It was obviously break 14. I don't think he took anything off.
Have you ever encountered anyone using the Dragon Riders?
Dragon Riders?
Yeah. It's a Dragon Riders.
Yeah, but he was a very new player. He only played a couple of games and quit.
I've never seen them used effectively, ever.
They can't be used effectively. They're 300 points. It's not possible.
Although maybe I should attempt to see if I can use them effectively.
Why not? I mean, unit of dragons is pretty interesting, but...
it's not a unit, is it?
Work with them.
It's one stand.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. It's so glass cannon, isn't it? Glass, you know, like glass jaw. Like, if you lose it easily, it's 300 points gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you look at survivability, I mean, the Stegodon is 250 points and it's like three times as survivable.
Yeah.
So, I don't like it. What else have I been doing? Kings of War again, oh God. That was even worse. I played it 1,000 points. It just gets worse. It's just more and more cavalry rush at each other.
So I keep wanting to play it. I keep wanting to try it out. Should I bother?
No.
Okay.
I'm playing it because we got Tom, a guy I'm mates with. He's running a journeyman league, so I like to help out by kind of joining in. So I'll play your.
So something as a plus point for Kings of War is the fact that like the units are a base and they don't have to fill it with models. I think that's quite a good thing.
They call it multi-basing.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. And it says like, so this is my profile of a base of stuff, and I can model up little scenes of things going on. Because I'm not going to take models away. So the unit's there until it's gone, and it's like a complete thing on the table, and then you take it off in its entirety. I mean. I don't know. I think that's quite a good idea. But it would, to be honest, with myself, like I love War Machine. I love War Master, and I'm really enjoying Net Epic at the moment. Something would have to be pretty damn good for me to like want to spend the limited time I have on something else. It would have to be really.
Okay, so I mean, it was written by Alessio.
Yeah.
He's a bright guy, and there are a couple of really good bits to it. The nerve is really good. I don't know if you know how that works, but the way nerve works is good. And the multi-basing, as Paul's pointed out, is really good. So when stuff... You're not fiddling about taking a model off and another model off. You just take it all off.
Yeah.
On the flip side, the game is really, really kind of linear. You aim at stuff, and then it just all smashes in the middle, and then whatever's left standing... There's very little tactics involved that I can find.
Mm-hmm.
If you like a game where you throw a bucket of dice, and then another bucket of dice, and another bucket of dice, and then somebody wins, it's a good game. I find it quite tedious, though. There was one charge I did. I charged a unit of badger riders. Now, dwarves riding badgers, that's a thing. So, cavalry so overpowered, I take three units of those, three massive maximum units of them. And when one went in the front, one went in the side, I had to roll 78 dice.
Okay, that's good.
Well, it's good, except then it's 78 dice, and then it's four up to hit, so then you've weedles all the... And then you've got vicious, so it's like four up to wound, but you're re-rolling ones. God, it takes forever to even count the dice. I just want to use, like, an app and just press the button on the app and say, tell me what happened. I don't want to roll these dice. Tell me what happened.
Too much effort, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Too much effort. So... I'm not exactly loving it. I will follow it through, though. I'll do the next two games, and then that'll be doing.
Fair enough.
So our next point is the 100 subscriber competition.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
So we had if you're not aware, I had to draw it because we were going on Skype. So I had to draw it during the day with my son, who was off sick. Mm-hmm. And Dave Downs won. On the plus side, Dave's collecting high elves, so good for him. He gets a bit of a head start.
I mean, it's a guy from our club, so... I mean, everyone, you saw the video. I thought it was a very cute video of your son. That's what happened. You know, like,
That is what happened. So I saved on the postage, and he got about 1,000 points of alternative L's. So.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Good for him. Mm-hmm. Okay, right. So we're now on to our main topic. which is Alex. You're going to tell us a little bit about what it is you've done. You especially talk to us about Jim's rule book.
What have I done?
What have you done? Talk to us about Jim's rule book and what your plans are for Warmaster. There it is.
Yeah, there it is. There it is. Everyone else can't see it. I can see it. So Jim likes to describe himself as my chief of staff. So I can sit back. Let's have a tournament and other people have to organise it. Anyway, so what Jim did was we, you know, again, as we talked about earlier, there's this people, and you created this, Paul, you've gone and made these books available effectively, you know, easy to, and we just decided that the rule book as was, because obviously no one's officially changing the rule book yet, if ever, we just felt that it could be more accessible, because if we're going to be playing a game at a tournament or whatever, just let's get on with it and let's not waste time by trying to find the page. So what Jim did off his own back was effectively go through all the individual bits of rules and index them.
Yeah.
And move them around. So you have this wonderful rule book now where literally you can go, right, what do I need to find? And you go on the list and you find it and you turn to that page. Thus removing lots of... What's the one? It's always the one about code going off the table and then finding that thing you have to roll to see if you come back on the table.
It's
so well hidden in the rule book. So it's that sort of stuff now, which usually takes about 5-10 minutes for you to find. Yeah. You know, when you've only got a 2-hour game in the tournament, 2.5-hour game, you don't want to be messing about with that. So Jim has rationalised the rule book.
As a plus point, at the first event, I was TOing using the rule book. And it was when I had to consult the rules about something. And it's like I could show the player, this is the rule. Yeah, it was very easy to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So the other things we've done is now some of you guys may not have ever played War Master Ancients, but you may well have be aware of it.
I know of it.
And you know there was War Master Ancients. There was also something called Battle of the Five Armies, which Rick also produced. So, and effectively, what we have in those two games are our War Master 1.5 almost, where so I've played a lot of War Master Ancients as well, and I really like it as a system. It makes for a very different gaming experience than War Master. War Master is all about the clash, hitting hard, let's just go in it, usually involving lots of units of cavalry. But actually, with what I found with War Master Ancients was that you get a much more positional style of play. You don't just go at it. The game isn't designed that way. It's the same rule mechanics. You know, you're going to recognise the rules, absolutely. Yeah. But a few things which are different, which just make the whole experience different. And suddenly, cavalry isn't necessarily king. Chaos Warriors aren't going to chew up everyone else because you don't have them. And you find people playing the game positionally. They're manoeuvring. They're waiting for a moment to strike.
Yeah.
To take advantage of a flank that suddenly opened up and so on. That was really good. But what we've done is we've ported across some of the concepts of Ancients to Warmaster.
Yeah.
Which we felt helped to resolve some issues which had always been there. From our perspective anyway.
Oh no, definitely. We've done a podcast talking about the errata, the one paid errata at the back, and it's all gold. It's like everything in it is like, yeah, I totally agree with that. That clearly makes a better game, and it's fantastic. And that is and us going forward, this is what we're using in the R4 events.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I don't think we need to do much more redesigning.
No,
it's there, and we shouldn't need to. Otherwise, there's a problem with the game system itself.
Yeah.
So, and I guess really, what my focus would be, we've got. Have you talked about? Have you talked about Lex? Have you mentioned Lex?
No.
Okay. So Lex, Lex Van Roy is very much keeper of the keys, I guess. So he was part of the original kind of game testing for War Master back in the day. And when Warmaster kind of, you know, GW didn't produce the rulebook anymore, and when we had the specialist going to the website turn up and whatnot, Lex was the guy who kind of effectively got the rulebook on the web so that you can actually download it. And then he also published the Trial Armies book as well. So Lex has been sort of, yeah, he's very much been in his way keeping the whole game existing and accessible. And what I you know, Lex and I have talked about in the past and recently is that we've got this Trial Armies book, again, which probably I know you've also created. And it's got a bunch of armies in there and so on. He's showing it on the screen now. And it's great, but also it's very old as well. You know, and it's got a whole load of lists on there, some of which were armies which were published in the original War Mag, and then some of lists which guys who were around Passion at the time made up, and it all got put into this book.
Yep.
And that's great. And, you know, some of the armies which were never made official are there, but they're Warhammer canon. So as far as I'm concerned, yeah, fair game. Let's do it. Yeah. I'm just thinking now, maybe it's time we revisit that Trial Armies book and see what we can do to refresh it. And I'm not saying they're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater or wanting to radically change anything, but just going, what new things can we do with the army lists?
Yeah.
Add some army lists to it. Going back always faithfully to the source material.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back to Warhammer World. Yeah. Were and going, well, what other armies are out there? Can we start, you know, maybe playtesting them, and thus, you know, helping with the future?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's I think it's a great idea, really. I mean, it's I don't know, just on a tangent. Did you hear Alex? Oh, like one of the, because Rick Priestley's on Facebook.
Yes.
Did you hear that? Yes. He put a comment up, and I can't forget now what it's about, but he said, oh, Warmaster's getting a bit of a resurgence. And it's like, coincidentally, I did a second version of the game, but it never went to print. Mm. He actually had created Mark II, but it never, like, happened.
Some of us then all did a little wee in excitement.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I've met Rick Priestley ages ago, a long time ago, but I would love to meet him again. It would be, I don't know. I'd love to sit down and have a cup of tea with him. It would be great.
Yeah. So I've met Rick a number of times and played games against him in Warmaster. As you can imagine, I had beers with him. It's good to chat to him.
Mm-hmm.
I know what he said, didn't he, and I knew that this would be the response, that GW has that under lock and key.
Yeah.
So Alex, how are you going to disseminate this rule book? What's your plan? Apart from getting Paul to go to Staples once a week.
Yeah, relying on Paul as the logistics man.
I mean, are you allowed to disseminate it? Are you allowed to disseminate it, as far as you know?
So he, again, in conversation with Lex about this, so he lives out in Holland. You know, again, he's one of these guys that's very much the sort of core of the Euro GT, the Euro get-togethers, as they're called. And we discussed how we would do it, that, you know, do we turn this into a massive sort of European Parliament affair where there's like 50 of us all around representing the various countries debating endlessly. You know, it's forever, 1 minute to midnight, and then we've got to make a decision. But actually, what we're going to do, we're going to keep it as a, because we know that all the other countries, like France, for example, have all kind of gone their own way. The groups that still play Warmaster have chosen rules and so on and kind of applied them in their way. I think maybe Sweden as well. We're just going to do the UK end for now. We're going to effectively have a sort of committee that will start entertaining submissions. Effectively, you know, now I think we've got a lot of people playing over a number of tournaments. I think we're in a position where we can actually stress test ideas in a way we haven't really been able to for a long time now. So if someone comes up with an army, you know, obviously they, whatever they're doing, they try it with their friends, they play it, they see, does it work? Are there any problems with it? And then maybe they go, right, well, actually, could we play this at the could we bring this to the tournament? And we'll go, yeah, let's have a look at your army list.
Yeah.
And then let's Because ultimately, you know what it's like. You face an army and you lose against it, and there are lots of things you felt were bad about it because it did this thing, it did that thing. It's just one game. You need to get it
you can't make a decision off one game.
Yeah, exactly. So, mm-hmm. so they need to be stress tested in a competitive environment against lots of different types of people.
Exactly.
People who really know the game as well.
Yeah.
So effectively, that's what we're going to do then, and then we'll meet at the end of the year and go right. What's out there? What we've seen? What should we include in the in that army book, which we then produce and disseminate?
Okay.
And then you know, as far as Lex's concerned, we'll go right. This is the UK, UK take. Europe, what do you think?
Yeah.
And that's how we're going to take it, really.
So it'll be interesting to see how you deal with the kind of high elf dilemma. If you say you've got to play with the tournament list, or if you say, you know, the original list is fine, there wasn't a problem there to solve.
Yeah, I guess there's definitely a problem to solve with the Dragon Riders. and I think we're open to tweaking. Again, there's enough of us with enough experience to go, you know what? I think for me, it's if you have this army list and you have all these different options, it's they have to be viable options.
Yeah. You're right, because it's a bad army list, isn't it? Where there's, in this army list, there's this choice. But you never take it, so no one ever does.
No. Yeah.
It's like, that's not a good army list then, is it? Like, like for example, like in a dwarf army list, like the classic dwarf army list, there's a place for everything, even like gyrocopters if you wanted to use them.
Yeah.
But in other army lists, it's like, well, like we did an episode recently about Tomb Kings, and like Barry's like, I'd never take the Sphinxes, I'd never take the Bone Giants, I'd never take the Bolt Throwers.
Yeah, but that's my choice. That's not like the Dragon Rider.
Are they even? That's the thing. If they're not viable choices.
Yeah, but they are viable choices to certain people. But the Dragon Rider is just lunacy. It was completely unnecessary.
Yeah, it's actually a really good case in point because Jim and I are talking about Sphinxes. And then the guy who owns the Undead Army, Mark Rowlands, was talking about Sphinxes. Yeah, we all like Sphinxes. We'd absolutely massively take Sphinxes. And that's the thing. I think there are probably a couple of armies out there that are very much one-trick ponies.
Yeah.
Which is a is that a shame?
Don't know.
It's a thing. You'd like to think that each army list, at least you can do a couple of different versions of, and actually be competitive with. I think that's the key. I'm thinking Bretonians. Well, there's two ways you can go. You can either go lots of knights or not many knights.
Or no knights.
Well, you're going tournament list either way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see what you do at the end of the year and which lists survive and which lists don't.
I mean, from a personal point of view, I would like there to be a list for every race in the Warhammer world, because I just think it's cool that there is. And so for example, Skaven only have one list, and that's going to be that. Now you could theoretically do tons of theme lists for Skaven, because you could have mono clan lists, that kind of thing. But do they need it really? I think the Skaven list is fine, and it's where the choices are going to be is where there's more than one list for a race. It's like, what do we do about if you're going to do a theme army, like what restrictions are there? I don't know, like that is the debate, etc.
But on
the plus point, when I was putting together, this Warhammer Armies book, there's so many armies. There's like 35 lists in here.
Yeah.
There's tons of choice, and including armies that are in the old Hammer fluff but never made it into the 28mm scale game. Araby, Nippon, Cathay.
Yeah.
None of them were actual Warhammer official armies. They were just there in the fluff. And, you're only limited by your imagination. Like, you could do, we were talking, did our last podcast about Tomb Kings. Well, you could do an ancient Tomb Kings army that's actually living. Before Nagash killed them all. It's like the living army of Nakraken. You could do that.
Indeed. My thing, and I post them on forums an example of it is of a list I was doing for Knights of the White Wolf, so Middenheim Army.
Yeah.
Was that for me, the Empire, you know, when you read all the Empire fluff and whatnot, and it's all the various, you know, you've got Middenheim, Talibheim, and so on, you've just got the standard army, the Empire Army list. And you've got the standard Empire wizard, which I think is the worst wizard in the game ever. Okay, it's cheap, but it's still rubbish.
He's got teleport.
I just think, well, we've got, there's bags of room for variation there. And I'm not just talking about painting them different colours to represent the regions.
Yeah.
There's more there. You know, and I noticed that guy, there was a competition run a few years back when WarMag went online and it was the create a new unit. And then someone won that competition because they did a great swords.
Yeah.
Stats. And great, we absolutely, because there wasn't any representation for heavy infantry. So I could see you could actually have, you know, three, four, five Empire, genuine Empire variant lists, all playing very differently.
Yeah, because that's the thing. It's like, where if we're going to expand on this, it's like, for example, Empire. Well, do you create a thing for greatswords as an example? But is a weakness of the Empire is the fact they don't have heavy infantry, and by giving them a unit, is that making them then too good? I don't know. That's what you've got to think about, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely. Like, yeah,
I've played quite a bit of Empire now, and it's like, yeah, they don't have that unit that can go into, that can dig somebody out of a wood. Yeah. Just by themselves, because they're better troops. They don't have that. They have flagellants who have a lot of attacks but no armor, mm-hmm. and then their regular infantry is just humans, isn't it? You know, like, so is by giving them something they don't already have, is that making the army too good? That's what you've got to consider.
That's a good question, and that's then I think actually where this is where the whole stress testing thing has to come into play.
Yeah,
you know, and actually thinking, okay, what have we done here? Are we solving a problem? Or providing a solution to a problem which actually doesn't exist, just because, or actually have we all created a genuinely new idea, a concept that will work and give you a different style of gameplay and theme and whatnot? You're absolutely right, and that's something that I am concerned that we don't go down that road.
Because the point of an army list is that it has its strengths and weaknesses.
If you
end up giving it too much, improving too much of its weaknesses,
yeah.
might make it unbalanced. I don't know. That's the danger, basically, is the whole point, like, case in point, is the whole point about an Empire list is that you do not have the unit that can get into a fortified bit of scenery and win, beat the enemy back. They don't have dwarves. If you give them a unit of effectively dwarves or something, is that a mistake?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I've looked at the Empire army list and gone, well, actually, you know what, really? Okay, I've got to take the crappy infantry. Mm-hmm. And actually, if I was, having done it before, played in tournaments with Empire, I'd look at it now and go, you know what, I'm just going to get as many knights as I can do. And just, that's it, it's a knight army. It's mm-hmm. it's Praetorians, but with a better breakpoint.
Yeah.
Effectively. You know, I just think conceptually, I think we're missing a trick with the Empire one.
Anyway, well, these are all things to consider. Basically.
Yeah, I think how the game limits it is they only generally allow 8 entries into the army list. So within those 8 entries, you've got to have like your infantry, your cavalry, your artillery. Yeah. So that's how it breaks down. Empire have got 8 choices. It's just they don't have heavy infantry.
Yeah. Mm.
They don't have flies either, I don't think.
No, they don't.
They do not.
No.
But the Dogs of War army list does.
Yeah.
Yes.
They do, yes.
They have men, hand
bird men.
Right. So, Alex, let me pick your brain.
Yeah.
Okay, Kings of War I played yesterday. And basically the game's dominated by cavalry completely, totally and utterly. It feels the same a little bit in War Master, although obviously cavalry can't go into woods and other places. But how can you deal with cavalry long term? What's the solution? What?
Oh well, I mean, this is one of the things we ported across from Ancients, wasn't it? Was this concept, very simple concept of you count casualties before you count support before casualties. Mm. Yeah. So suddenly, whereas before, if you had a massive load of cavalry charging your infantry line, you then took off your casualties, and then you worked out what the score was and if you had any supports left. We changed that. Deliberately to try and address what we felt was that cavalry imbalance.
Yeah.
And again, we've had lots of conversations with this, and I've talked about, we talked to Lex about it, where War Master was always envisioned as this game where it was literally going to be a big clash of sort of, yeah, cavalry effectively sweeping across the plain. And we thought, yeah, okay, I get that. That was it for us. And I think, we've played a hell of a lot of games now with that rule, and it has changed things. Suddenly, cavalry isn't as kingly as it was.
Okay. Yeah. So it was even worse, was it, back in the day?
It was awful.
So it was even worse. I mean, I'm seeing the horror after the event, after the change.
Yeah. So I play dwarves. I've always been known as a dwarf player. With occasional sort of heretical moves to a different army, but dwarves. Dwarf for me, the army I hated out of everything was High Elves. Because as soon as you had the Silverhelms charging my heavy infantry, that was it. And it just felt as if nothing could stop. If you had infantry, you couldn't stop a cavalry charge.
It still feels that way.
It still feels that way, but I'll tell you what, though. It can feel that way sometimes. But cavalry will bounce a hell of a lot more now these days.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely, Barry. I mean, the fact, if you have, two units of infantry... the fight happens and you've got three support already. You're gonna score three before after a dull dice a roll. That's a massive thing.
I agree. But you wouldn't just throw one unit of cavalry in. It would be generally two units, and then if you're clever, two units and a dragon, and then good guy.
Well, if you're getting all that in, though, you deserve to win. Don't you?
It's not that hard. It's only one roll.
I think what it just does now is it just. It gives a cavalry player pause for thought.
Yeah.
Whereas before, there wouldn't be any question about it. Yeah, I'm just going to charge.
So why cavalry, not chariots? Is it just due to the armour?
Oh, I love chariots.
I'm starting to turn to them, but
it's the 4+ armour, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I know I love chariots. I'd always say like Chaos Army, I'd always go chariots. Don't do knights, don't do marauders, just do chariots.
Fair enough. Okay, so moving on. Our point is 2016, year of the resurgence of Warmaster.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah, Alex, do you want
to... Hang on, sorry, one more question.
Go on.
We didn't get an answer, so what... I'm like Joe Public, and I'm sat at home, on my bed, and I don't want to contact Paul. How do I get this? How do I get this rule book?
When you're lying in bed.
How do I get this Jim Beach rule book?
Oh, well, that's a good question, isn't it?
It is. That's the question I asked about half an hour ago.
Was it? How can we get it?
I don't know. Is it allowed to be disseminated?
Oh, God. You know what? We'd have to ask Lex, I think.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to do that.
I mean, because it's not as if we've actually,
it's not like you're making money. You're not trying to, sell it or anything.
No, and it's just all we're saying is it's a variant. You know, it's local rules.
House rules.
Effectively. Okay. So
You can come back and tell us what Lex says then one day.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, do it next week if you like.
Okay.
Okay, so...
So talk to us about 2016, Alex.
Tell us about 2016.
Right, yes, 2016. So, the future's bright. So this year, obviously, we've already had the gathering down at 40K back in January. Who won that again?
You did, Jan.
Did I?
Yeah, it was some bent nip on list.
Bent nip on list. So there you go. So debate about nip on to come. So we have that. Then we have the 31st of April. 30th, because 31st doesn't... that last Saturday in the month of April, we've got the Warmaster Doubles tournament at Saffron Walden, which is a new thing because we haven't done a doubles tournament before.
What I have here is your listed allies chart of who can ally with who.
Yeah.
Is that likely to go firm? Is this what you think the will be?
It's open to debate. I mean, we'll need to go firm. Probably what we'll do is we'll again discuss with the Brains Trust invite any comments. And then about a month before, we'll do that kind of final operation order where we'll say, right, guys, this is what, where, when, how. But I know there's a couple of armies which maybe people feel might feel, well, we said they're neutral, actually they're good, or, you know, lawful, neutral, whatever. But effectively it's common sense, and we're using again Warhammer canon. As to who you pair up with.
Yeah.
So that's coming.
With your doubles tournament, say I wanted to play but I didn't have a partner. Is there going to be some? How's that going to work?
Are you going to matchmake?
So that's fine. So what we're doing is you can turn up on the day. We'll get your partner. Yeah. Basically, Jim and I are the spare pair. For that one. And if we have one person spare, one person needing a partner to make it all equal, then Jim steps forward with one of a number of the armies he has that will be suitable. And it will play, and then I'll sort of sit back and be the rules lawyer. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be armies of 1,500 points. We wrangled long and hard about how to...
Some of the conversations about it, and it's like, well, you know... But, yeah, it wasn't unopinionated.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes you just got to go, you know what, we're going to try it this way.
We're going to do this way.
Yeah. So what did you decide on?
What
did you decide on as the rules to go to 1,500?
So the rules are that in 1,500 points, what you do is you take your minimums, and you sort of, let's say you have, in an Empire army, you have to take two halberdiers at every 1,000 points. In 1,500 points, guess what? You have to take three.
Yeah? Makes sense.
It makes sense. However, if you can only take one cannon in a 1,000-point army, you can still only take one cannon in a 1,500-point army.
So fractions rounding down.
Yeah, very much so. So, you know, I think a lot of people then look at that and go, okay, then how you look at your 2,000-point army, you go, well, what works with that? So, for example, for me, in the 2,000-point army, then I'd always be wanting to take two cannon. I'm never going to take one cannon in a 1,500-point army, personally. Just, it's like whatever. So
are you going to take no cannons then in that? Would you take no cannons?
No, I wouldn't, personally. If I could only take one cannon in a 1,500-point army, I'm not even going to bother.
Yeah, exactly, because it can't protect itself.
No. So it drives you to think about how you shape your army list in different ways.
Yeah.
Good. Good. Interesting.
So that's all good. That's all good. Yeah. And we'll just see how it goes.
Team Warmaster Podcast will be there, me and Barry, as a team. We've not decided yet on what our... armies are going to be, but we are going to be there. I've already bought the tickets. We don't know what yet we're going to use.
It'll be painted.
That's that's encouraging. So that's that tournament, and then we have another tournament over the summer, don't we, Paul?
Yes, we do. July the 2nd, which is the same again. I will always run an event which is very stat like. Let's call it the standard, which is going to be 2,000-point singles games, and I'll leave a variation on the theme to Saffron Walden. And I think your intention, isn't it, to do one normal tournament and one different tournament?
Yes. Yeah. So then in November, which is I think the 12th, Saturday the 12th of November.
Yeah.
That is the Triwizard.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's always been there, and that is the classic. Standard three matches, old school, really.
Okay, so what's been the feedback about the death clock, and is that something you're looking at for your tournaments now, or are you still going to go untimed?
For now, we're going to stay untimed.
Okay.
We've had talks about it, but we're sticking with what we got. But also, and this is important for me to say, is that, you know, I played in the tournament in January with the death clock. It wasn't really a problem at all. And I think as a solution for me, as a solution to make sure that people finish on time, yeah, absolutely. I get it. So I have no qualms with death clock at all. But we're saving Walden for time being. will stick without, but entirely happy.
I think with a doubles event anyway, a court system isn't going to be there.
No, no, I was talking about November, but good.
Yeah.
Right, fine. Right, thanks, Alex. So, Paul.
Yes.
Have you got your best speaking voice?
I do. I mean,
because we've got two emails.
There's one point we didn't say. It was like 2017 and onwards. We've already mentioned that, really, haven't we? Yeah. So you want me to read?
Hey, more of the same for 2017.
More of the same and more. So okay, I want read the emails, Paul. We got two emails.
Yes, we had. I mean, but first of all, I mean, are the emails going to the right address, Barry? Do you want to give a different email address?
No, it's going to the right address. It's just that I wasn't overly connected with the email account. But I am now. I get notifications now.
Okay, cool. This is good. So we've had two emails to our podcast, and we're going to talk about them. Okay, so the first one is read from a message from Chris Cyphers, and it says, "Hi there. I have been recently enjoying your podcast on Warmaster, brought back many great old memories of the game. Do you know if there are any Warmaster groups in Bristol? And you mentioned about a doubles tournament coming up soon. Can you send me a link to this and any other Warmaster tournaments? Kind regards, Chris Cyphers." Alex, do you know of a Warmaster group in Bristol?
I know of a time when they hosted the Warmaster tournaments down that way. So there were individuals that played it. However, long time ago. 12 years ago. So there certainly were people that played it down that way. Heading towards that way, Devizes, which is kind of that way, they have a big gaming club down there. And they do the Warmaster Ancients.
Okay.
They have a big gaming weekend with lots of different game systems, but they do run a Warmaster Ancients. So you've got people around that region that also do play Warmaster as well.
Yeah. So if you wanted to play this game and you didn't know where to advertise the scene, would you say like Specialist Games Forum? Is that the place?
Absolutely. That's definitely the place to start. Yes.
Just simply put up there and say, hey, I'm from this area in the UK.
Yeah.
I want to play this game. Who else is around?
Yeah. Well, what I would say, it's like fishing. So it may take a while. So don't get stressed out if you leave the bait in there for a few weeks.
Yeah. So as a reply to this guy's message, yes, we can send you links to the Warmaster events that we're running. No problems at all. Simply drop us an email. We'll reply back. Barry, do you want to take care of that?
Yeah. Or look at the Facebook page because there'll be links to everything we're doing, including the events we're attending, the Triwiz and your Bunker Warmaster 2.
Cool.
Can I just leap in?
Leap in, Alex.
Thank you. All the things we're talking about right now, we're in a really good place this year. We've now got four tournaments. They're all one-day tournaments. Back in the day, the glory, heady days, it used to be 2 days long, these things. Can you remember that? It would be nice in the future, the future.
Well, it's not unreasonable. I mean, why not? Yeah, if you build it, they will come, is the expression.
Yeah. Well, if you get more than 16 players, you need to think about four rounds. Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, in a 16-player event, you should play four rounds. So that kind of, and with the length of time we want to give for a Warmaster game, that is already a 2-day event. Managing it.
Oh yeah, I mean five games every weekend would be brilliant.
Yeah, it will. I mean, why not? You know, like I'm not saying it can't happen. It's like, in fact, if this game, you know, like, we'll see how many attendees we get. Because the next one I'm going to hold at 40K, there isn't an upper cap limit, though they could easily take 32 players in that venue at 6x4 tables. They do it for other game systems. If there turns out to be 32 players of Warmaster, well, then I'll look next time as maybe we need to make it a weekend.
And book Bognor Regis.
Right. Next one, okay, Paul. So,
our second email is from a guy just simply called Andy, and he says, "Hey guys, just a quick email to say great podcast. I've been a collector and fan for Warmaster for years, but have never been able to play a single bloody game because none of my meta have ever interested. So who knows? I may take the long trip across London and come up to Cheltenham sometime. I'm in Epsilon, so it's a mission. Anyway, just so you don't blow smoke up your asses with compliments, I was also linking these for Empire figures. I don't think you've mentioned them on your cast yet. Sculpted by old GW and Lord of the Rings fave Bob Naismith. And he does, and he gave a quote for where, like a link to how to get to them.
Yeah.
From Warmonger Miniatures. And these buildings are pretty cool, especially with the village templates at the bottom. And that's from Total Battle Miniatures. Again, a link to that. Anyway, keep up the good work and onwards and upwards to 200 subscribers. Best, Andy.
Nice
guy.
Hey,
that's a nice email. Thank you very much, Andy. And I will say, is when Barry showed me, you know, sent this email over to me, I clicked on both those links. And I actually, they're lovely. The first one, the Empire models, are lovely. They're from US. I actually went and ordered a unit of great swords and a unit of pikemen just to see what, you know, because they weren't expensive and just to see the quality you get.
Unit of pikemen.
Oh, those guys there. Yeah, you're holding them up. Yeah, like,
I bought a whole load of the pikemen and the greatswords for my Dogs of War army.
Oh, that's excellent.
And the second thing was the buildings, the Total Battle Miniatures. Yeah, it was a scale of lovely buildings at 10 mil scale. But what they, and the guy quietly rightly points out, Andy, is at the bottom on the page, it does groups of buildings in with modular like laydown. Like, because the thing is, a Warmaster scenery is you want it to be an abusive area terrain. And it's exactly that. And I instantly was like, that's a great idea. Because individual buildings, nice, but the fact that they're selling them in a nice little village circuit with hedgerows and everything, which you could just put a bit of card underneath as the template. I was like, I went and ordered one straight away. So like, they're in the mail on my way to me, and they'll be on our gaming table soon enough.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah.
And thanks for the emails. If you do want to send in emails, we'll read them out and we will do our best to reply to them. And Paul will do his best to spend money on them.
Yes,
that's what
exactly.
He does.
If you send me links to stuff, I'm probably going to spend money on it. So be careful.
Okay. Right. So, anything else you've got to tell us about Alex, or?
Well, I'm just deciding what army to take for doubles. I haven't quite pinned that down yet.
So what are Nippon? Are they neutral?
Nippon and neutral.
This is pre-Pearl Harbor.
Very pre-Pearl Harbor. But I think I'm really tempted to try Brett's. I tried them in our practice 1500 then. Yeah,
with
another
what?
Variation on the breakpoint issue.
Brett's with who?
That's a good question.
Because that's an interesting thing about the doubles. You can kind of get some really weird matchups, really kind of cool.
Yeah, well, I think
Brett's and Wood Elves would be like that's the matchup they normally have in the fluff. Because they worship basically a Wood Elf like goddess. They don't even know it's a Wood Elf goddess. That's like, that would be the classic matchup, is in the most fluff one. Or Bretonians Empire, because they have worked together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
then it's the summer tournament I need to think about as well.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You've got to come back and defend your title.
I've got to come back and defend my title. So I've done it with Nippon.
Yep.
I would have done it with dwarves, but I've lent them to someone else.
Yeah.
Real men do it with ogres.
Hey, well, I'll tell you what. Jim Beach's son, has got his ogre army that Jim basically built using lots of heavily modified the original Warmaster ogres.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just taking cannon from the Empire cannon and whatever, and just, you know, doing a little bit of magic, and suddenly you got your
lead belches.
And all. It looks an awesome army. It's sort of like the most extreme super heavy army. I'd like to have some fun with that.
Okay, excellent.
So I think is there anything else to mention before we go? I was just saying, like, Alex, do you want to plug your books that you write? I mean, like, you didn't mention in your like chat about you being.
Richard and Judy.
I wasn't going to mention that.
Like Richard and Judy. You're Judy though, Paul.
Yes, so I also write books as well. Unsurprisingly, they're fantasy novels. If you were to go to Amazon and type my name in, you would see a few books I've written about various things. But you know, the theme basically being, of course, men with swords hitting each other repeatedly and swearing a lot.
Have you got a particular like novel in particular you would say like as your as a seminal piece of your work? Like,
so I've got funnily enough, I've got three series kind of going at once, which is probably a dull thing to do, but so there's kind of something for everyone. The first book I ever wrote was called Redoubt, and I started it when I was in the Royal Engineers back in 1998 on an army training area in Germany. And effectively it's Islandwana or Zulu, but a fantasy version, and that's very, very squaddy. If you know, it's now very much embedded within military at that time, so all the language, it's very much like that. I've then got a sort of darker fantasy called The Coming of Night, which I think actually probably is my most popular book, and the main character, young female protagonist, but darker fantasy. And then I've just written an epic fantasy as well called The End of Empire.
Ooh.
And I set out to write a big thing. And it's kind of worked out really nicely.
Okay.
So something for everyone.
Fantastic.
Well done, Alex. Well done.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, like I'm definitely going to have to get, like next time I'm in, could I buy these in Waterstones?
Not now.
Okay. So I have to go onto Amazon and get them.
Yeah. Or you just come around to my office and I can give you a copy in the summer.
No,
okay. Well, thanks for sharing your time with us, Alex.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Okay.
Well, definitely, we're going to have to invite. I guess we're going to have to invite Jim on, aren't we?
So, you really are.
I did invite him.
Yeah, we're because there's people from. I mean, it would be fun to do a episode where we chat to like a relatively new player. And like we can pick one from our club, and that'd be quite. I quite like to do that, Barry, and like you know, and like ask them. So why do you want to play War Master? What's your first impressions of it? That kind of thing. That'd be quite interesting.
And are you going to go on the road and go to do it actually from a tournament, and do some sort of
anything's possible.
The thing we've been requested, Alex, which you might quite find funny, is in War Machine. There's like there people like to Skype. Is it not Skype? They put it on like they record their game. And
yes.
Goes on YouTube.
Twitch.
And we've been asked, because we often put up on the War Master group, say, we played this game and we played it to this time, is that we've had people say, how do you play the game so fast? And they want to see how we play it. And so, like, basically, people are asking out there, more than one are asking for us to put a video on of, like, basically a game of War Master, like, which... I don't know, like, because the models are so small, are they going to come up on the camera at all?
Yeah.
Is it better actually with tokens, because then you might see the tokens? I don't know, but that's the general, I mean, or you could not do it as a video and just do it as stills, but that is something we've been asked for, and we're still wondering, mulling over.
Yeah, that'd be a challenge. Mm-hmm. Unless you get lots of little tiny cameras that you fit to individual units.
Yeah,
like headcam. Can we headcam?
Because what's hilarious to me and Barry is like, because you see some of these comments and people say, how did you play so quick? And we're like, well, how did you not? You know, it's like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, well, how?
It's an interesting thing. It's something Jim and I noticed when we've been over playing in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
The English style of play is very fast.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but we will rattle through turns.
Yeah.
But as others will just take their time and
talk
about, and you know, hey, whatever you enjoy doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, really, really, yeah, I know when Jim and I can rattle through a game in half an hour, a full set of turns, and just, you know, just because we just do it.
Very, very wham bam, thank you, ma'am.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. But you know, we like to think we're still deeply satisfying.
Okay, excellent.
Well, obviously, at some point in the future, we're going to have to do some trip abroad, aren't we? And, like, go that'd be hilarious. And we'll go play in some, like, European tournament. It'd be hilarious.
Okay.
Well, we can jack that up.
Yeah.
That will have to happen one day. Okay, right then. So, if you want to leave feedback, as always, you can contact us on the Facebook page or on warmaster.podcast@gmail.com. And that was War Master Podcast Episode 9 with Paul and Alex and Barry. So have a good
thanks
evening.
Thanks very much for listening, everybody.
See you
thank
guys.
You very much, bye. Alex, for being on the show.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay,
bye.
Good night.
wish I found some better sounds no one's ever heard. I wish I had a better voice and sang some better words. I wish I found some chords in an order that is new. I wish I didn't have to rhyme every time I sang. I was told when I get older all my fears would shrink, but now I'm insecure and I care what people think.
My name's Blurry Face and I care what you think. My name's Blurry Face and I care what you think. Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out. Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out.
Smell will take me back to when I was young. How come I'm never able to identify where it's coming from? I'd make a candle out of it if I ever found it. Try to sell it, never sell out of it. I'd probably only sell one. Maybe to my brother, cause we have the same nose, same clothes, homegrown, a stone's throw from a creek we used to roam. But it would remind us of when nothing really mattered. Out of student loans and treehouse homes, we all would take the ladder.
My name's Blurry Face and I care what you think. My name's Blurry Face and I care what you think. Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out. Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out.
Used to play pretend, give each other different names. We would build a rocket ship and then we'd fly it far away. Used to dream of outer space, but now they're laughing at their face, saying, wake up, you need to make money. Yeah. We used to play pretend, give each other different names. We would build a rocket ship and then we'd fly it far away. Used to dream of outer space, but now they're laughing at their face, saying, wake up, you need to make money. Yeah. Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out. Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out.
Used to play pretend, used to play pretend, bunny. We used to play pretend, wake up, you need the money. Used to play pretend, used to play pretend, bunny. We used to play pretend, wake up, you need the money. Used to play pretend, give each other different names. We would build a rocket ship and then we fly far away. Used to dream of outer space, but now they're laughing at the face, saying, wake up, you need to make money.